So I told you the story of our kitten and what happened, what his fate was. What I didn't tell you was the particulars about his wonderful and delightful and zany personality. And why I'm telling you that is for a very specific purpose. The purpose of working with, using it as a forum by which to introduce the equanimity practice. From the moment this kitten arrived as a tiny baby, he was completely unperturbed about the loss of his siblings, the loss of his mother, the loss of the familiar home that he had. He threw himself into his trickster personality completely with all his being. And so he would hide on the stairs and wait as people walked down the stairs and then jump out under their foot when he was just a little fur ball, easily crushed to death by a human foot. He tried to do the Chevy Chase Christmas tree trick on many occasions by trying to chew through the Christmas tree lights, and we finally unplugged them for good. He spent a lot of time trying to attack my computer cables and chew through them. And the entire household was both delighted and terrified because we hoped with all our hearts that we could raise him to the point where perhaps he would get a little more impulse control. So does that sound familiar to you? For those of us who are parents and we watch our children in certain ages of life, knowing full well, thanks to brain science, that they truly do not have impulse control as part of their complement of human abilities yet. But that's part of developing. And some scientists believe that it really doesn't hit until you're 21 or 22 years old. So, pretty intense. So, equanimity practice sometimes can be our refuge in this storm of life. The equanimity practice comes from one of four teachings that the Buddha gave. They are all in collection. They're called the four Brahma Viharas, which really loosely translated can mean the home. Vihara is home, the home of contentment or the home of peace. Sometimes it's translated as the home of happiness. But I had a teacher who loved to point out the nature of happiness. You're happy, then you're unhappy, then you're happy, you're unhappy. And he would make this horizontal line to illustrate the gift of contentment in this world, that it's not such a wildly fluctuating state based that could be a product of grasping and aversion. So some translators prefer just this home of peace, this home of contentment. And equanimity is said to be the fruit of our practice. As we deepen in practice, we come into this place of balance, of spaciousness, ease, ease with what is. And that's not always the case. And so the Buddha gave these specific practices. Over the years, the translations have shifted ever so slightly to fit the way that people speak presently. But when you look at the way that the phrases were, they haven't changed all that much for 2,500 years, just tweaking here and there. So just like in the metta practices, which is one of the other Brahma Vihara practices, offering loving kindness, recollecting the intentions to offer phrases of loving kindness to a series of people, beginning with ourselves, going to a mentor or a dear friend, going to then a neutral person, and then to a difficult person, sort of working our way through our experiential range of people. Equanimity often follows a certain pathway. It has certain descriptors that are attached. Like, there are general phrases of equanimity, and then there are phrases that are specific to those close to us who are in trouble. You know? There's phrases specific to strangers upon meeting people. And when you hear them, you notice that they're really tuned to the suffering that occurs from the mind's habit of judging. The third, or one of the Chinese patriarchs of Zen, maybe I think it's the sixth, I'm going to get them all mixed up, called it the burdensome practice of judging. That it just comes into the mind. You'll be walking down the street, and suddenly a stranger will pass in front of you, and the mind will come up with a judgment about that. My dad was this hilarious judger. He made it a practice, and he was so good at it. And what made it worse is that he was funny. He was delightful. And so sometimes I'll be walking down the street, and I hear in my mind one of his judgments come up. His favorite one was, that person walks like they're straddling a row of corn. Where do these things come from? Who knows? But there it is in your mind, you know. It's quite something. So the phrases for strangers say, may I not rush into judgment upon meeting you. Just a simple request. It's kind of like a prayer to ask for that gift. May I not rush into judgment upon meeting you. Here's the next part. Beautiful. May I allow my mind to remain open to you and see your heart. That one is extremely powerful. Often, when we're just starting in practice, or if we've been hurt by trusted others in our upbringing, what happens is we'll meet someone, and instead of judging them, we use the image of that person to judge ourselves. So we say to ourselves, that glorious being is so wonderful and cool, and he or she will never talk to me. So it's over. We're done. The game is up. We've made the decision. We've shut the door, but we're attributing it to that other person. So this burdensome practice can become quite twisted and tight and can actually feed on itself. May I not rush into judgment upon meeting you, whether I'm judging myself or you. It's quite something. So this evening, we will work through three different aspects of equanimity. We will begin by purposefully opening to with this intentional cultivation of the general experience of equanimity. Then we will move on to strangers, to working with the meeting of strangers. And then we will conclude with the equanimity version of the difficult person. In other words, for those close to us who are in trouble. I just saw a movie, and I was so fascinated by the title that I had to get it, because I'm on Amazon, and all you have to do is go click, and it comes to your house. Then you figure out later how to pay for it. Whoa. But I saw this film called, oh, now I'm going to forget it. Oh, it's called Meditate and Destroy. And it's about the life and formation of a teacher in this tradition, who's actually the son of one of my first teachers in this tradition. His name is Noah Levine. Stephen Levine is his father. And he went through a period of such intense drug abuse and arrest. He was arrested on numerous occasions. And even though he had the father that everyone believed, if I had that father, all I would have to do is go to that person and he would teach me how to let go, how to come into this place of peace. But in his rebellion, he refused to talk to his father about any of this until he finally was arrested. He knew that he saw his life. He said he saw himself dying. And the only way to live, in his estimation, was to come out of the hell that his mind had become. And so he used his phone call from prison, called his father. And I don't know if you've ever received a phone call from a prisoner, but you get like a tape because you're receiving a phone call from a prisoner. And then the entire time you're on the phone, it's going, beep, 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 because they're recording every word. But he called his father and he said, please, teach me how to meditate. His father, he said he knew he had one shot. That was it. And he knew that if any self-driven words came out of his mouth, the game was over. And so he began to teach, just straight, just like you hear here. You know, this is the beginning point. Sense your body. So here's this young man covered from here to heaven knows where with tattoos, piercings, the whole thing. Hasn't been sober, been smoking crack, the whole thing. Learning to practice meditation over the telephone. So let's begin. It's important to find a comfortable posture. Again, spend a few moments making contact with the ground. Feeling the grounding effect of the buttocks contacting the cushion or chair. And noticing the shoulders sitting up straight and tall. Really contacting this moment just as it is. The mind can come up and say, I don't feel well tonight. Next week when I practice this, then. To notice the mind and bring the attention back to this moment in this room. Letting your breath come and go as it will. But visualizing and sensing this breath as if it could be breathed through the center of the chest. Right into your heart. Right into this body. Just as you find yourself in this moment. So allowing this attention, gentle, friendly, kind, compassionate attention, to rest on the center of the chest, noticing the breath as it comes and goes. If you find that you're feeling floaty, wanting to float away, just come back. Come into this body. We'll begin with the phrases of equanimity. It's to offer to all beings, offer to yourself, offer to the beings who are awaiting this new year. Allowing these phrases to be taken in to yourself. In the beginning. And then at the end of this work with these phrases, we will offer them on behalf of everyone. So starting with ourselves. May my mind and heart always be in balance. May I be at peace with the events of my life and the events of the world. Things are as they are, despite my wishes otherwise. May I be at peace in the midst of it all. So letting those phrases touch your heart, connecting with the meaning. Now offering them on behalf of all beings. May all beings, hearts and minds, always be in balance. May all beings be at peace with the events of their lives and the events of the world. Things are as they are, despite our wishes otherwise. May all beings be at peace in the midst of it all. Sensing the breath, coming into this heart center, feeling the sense of balance, ease, openness to what is, trusting yourself to change the things that you can. Trusting yourself and your clarity. And this will sound familiar, to have the wisdom to know the difference. Moving into the practice for those we have just met. May I not rush into judgment upon meeting you. May I allow my mind to remain open to you and see your heart. And then finally, for those close to us who are in trouble, you'll notice that this set of phrases has a certain, well, I would call it loving but tough quality to it. For those of us who have sat and watched people take risks and harm themselves again and again and again, it's quite difficult, and often we feel the pain that we feel makes us want to create a therapeutic reality for that person, to smooth that person's way, when that is not possible. So we're held hostage. So these phrases are designed to cut through that sense of being held hostage, as you are the heir to your own actions. Your outcome depends upon your actions and not upon my wishes for you. Things are as they are, despite my wishes otherwise. Your happiness or unhappiness depends on your actions and not upon my wishes for you. I am holding you in my heart. Bringing a person or persons to mind. See that person seated before you. You are the heir to your own actions. Your outcome depends on your actions, not on my wishes. Things are as they are, despite my wishes otherwise. Your happiness or unhappiness depends on your actions, not on my wishes for you. I am holding you in. Breathing gently in and out the heart, the center of the chest. Noticing the noticing and sensing the tenor, the quality, the balance of these phrases. The heart is still open. But there's a sense that is not based on grasping, not based on aversion. So we end this equanimity sitting by again returning to the phrases, general phrases. May my mind and heart always be in balance. May I be at peace with the events of my life and the events of the world. Things are as they are, despite my wishes otherwise. May I be at peace in the midst of it all.